Welcome back to this special Bloomberg Quint podcast on AI and automation and how it will change both global and Indian industry, which is brought to you in association with Accenture. Sanjit, we've been speaking about the global impact of AI and what has really given rise to this entire explosion in AI, and largely, you know, it's a data explosion, how technology is really matured, etc. I want to come down specifically to India now. And we know that AI is going to be very key for India, given the various challenges that we face as a nation. And again, you know, we don't face some of the same people issues that, you know, the where we have, in fact, too many people as opposed to diminishing populations or old aging populations in the West. So from an India perspective, and again, the numbers sometimes, right, are really staggering because, for instance, one Accenture study says that artificial intelligence has the potential to add something like close to $1 trillion to India's economy by 2035. So what's your take on this? I mean, how does India fare on the adoption of AI? And especially, what is really the government doing? Because I think the government has a very key role over there. And plus, the government certainly has announced major vision around AI, AI for all, etc.
Yeah, that's a great point, Iba. And I think I loved what you said about the scale and size of India and the scale, size, and I think speciality of India. A lot of use cases that we've seen are going India out, if you ask me, especially in areas like agriculture. There are lots of similarities between, let's say, India, Africa, and Brazil, for that matter, where the agricultural patterns are the same, the problems are the same, the climates are the same. And again, availability of resources, education is not as high. So in fact, a lot of these use cases that we see are going India out, because if you can solve the problem, let's take the example of banking. SBI Bank, for example, a small app that an SBI Bank probably introduces goes to 20 million people at one point in time, and there is no other country that probably solving the same issue as an SBI, right? So, but when we look at India, I think there are multiple vectors that need a deep analysis, if you ask me. One is, of course, the government. The second is the private sector. When I say the private sector, it includes startups, it includes VCs, includes IT services, it includes your large multinationals, and of course, academy. I think this is a trisection of these three. But if you look at government in specific, I think the government of India has undertaken several initiatives to pave the way for AI-led economic transformation in India. It's probably the first government for the longest time which has introduced an agenda on technology in such a significant way. If you look at be it digital India, be it skills India, technology as an agenda has been huge. So while, you know, you may argue and, you know, that a lot of these initiatives are still at a very strategic level, focusing on a 5 to 10 year plan for increasing research and development, as well as commercial uptake of AI-powered solutions. But the vision that this government has been speaking about is to how to operationalize a lot of the strategic inputs that it has provided in the times to come. So in terms of providing professional financial support, if you may, for AI programs, the Ministry of Electronics and Information Technology has been funding projects by education institutions in the areas of computing, wireless networks, real-time landslide monitoring, and perception engineering. The ministry has also been, you know, operating a technology incubation and development for entrepreneurs, which is called TIDE scheme, for facilitating technology innovation over the last decade. There've also been a task force which was recently launched. In fact, a report came out of Niti Aayog, which sort of threw a light on the state of AI in some of the most influential sectors in India. And the report went at great depth to highlight few of the areas to focus on for AI-led development, so which sort of included manufacturing and supply chain. It included agriculture, it included education, healthcare, financial services, consumer retail, national security, defense, environment, and utility services. And what was also special about this report, Ivor, was that the task force also mentioned accessibility technology for differently abled people as one of the key agendas to be driven. And if you look at the 2018 budget, it also indicated the government's intent towards investing in research in new areas like AI robotics as part of a broader technology drive for India. In fact, Niti Aayog has sort of established a national program to conduct research and development in the above areas of these new technologies. You know, also, if you look at it, although not much has been spoken about it, but the mighty erstwhile DOE started knowledge-based computer systems back in 1986. So a lot's been done by the government, I would say. Yeah.
So, you know, tell me from an India perspective, which are some of the industries that you really see adopting AI, and which do you think are going to be the ones that are going to be adopting AI in 2019-20? And where do you really see AI spend going? I mean, how much do you see going up, etc.?
So I think India has a few inherent problems. For example, in our supply chain, in our manufacturing, we've got inherent problems in our healthcare services. We've got problems in agriculture and financial services. So some of the industries, you know, which are going to be really aggressive on the uptake, one is going to be manufacturing and supply chain. What we've also already seen are some amazing use cases, which are probably using you know, scheduling systems to be able to better deliver goods across the country. And at the back end, they're using artificial intelligence. In fact, there's a company we're working with right now. They've gotten a 15% boost in sales just because the scheduling has been done in a better way using an artificial intelligence system. So, you know, manufacturing and supply chain clearly is going to be one area. And it's also an area where a lot of IoT is being implemented. Because IoT is being implemented, it requires the wherewithal and the backing of algorithms for the data to make sense for an organization. So clearly manufacturing is going to be, and supply chain is going to be one area. Healthcare, again, is something that that's going to be extremely critical, because you see, because of the nature of our population and the percentage of doctors available per capita is very, very low. So, you know, back in time, if you remember, Ivo, the entire video-based doctor services became really big. Now, the reason, you know, they never really took off per se was because how many video calls can you offer? Now, because of artificial intelligence, doctors are now able to automate a lot of medication procedures, you know, medical procedures ahead of time with patients all across the country. And that's why you are seeing the emergence of, let's say, small and medium entrepreneurs as well, who are probably contributing to things like Modi Care, which is a huge agenda again for the government. So again, healthcare is going to be very big. The third big segment where we'll see AI come up is agriculture. Now, agriculture, what's happening is that, you know, in India, agriculture and farmers have been the worst hit all the time when weather sort of kicks in, and they have no insurance policies, and the ability to predict weather for them has not been very high. And that's where we're seeing some amazing startups do a lot of work on the ground. In fact, some of the some of the people I know personally from Xstarter Group, very big in the circuits, they left their jobs to actually start agri-tech companies and help farmers on the ground. And the idea is that can we help protect the interests of the farmer using this technology, at the same time provide them a cover of insurance and provide them an ability to be selling to the global markets, or at least national markets, without the intervention of a middleman. Let's not forget, in agriculture, the middleman is a huge problem statement. So again, agriculture is going to be, and agriculture sort of contributes 13% to the GDP of the country. So agriculture is going to be a big one as well, Ivo.
Okay. So, you know, Sanjay, there are a lot of fears also associated with AI and automation. I mean, primarily job loss, as you know it. There's also the issues with regard to privacy of data. And we've seen a lot of it even come up in courts, etc. now, where the Indian Supreme Court made privacy a fundamental right, etc. So where does responsible AI and automation really come? And how should really organizations build strategies around this to ensure that AI really delivers business benefits, provides new business opportunities, where really reskilled workers can be leveraged? So what do you see as some of the challenges, and how does responsible AI automation really come in over there?
It's a fantastic question. It's the... it's the same thin line between good governance and bad governance. You know, the age-old concepts of governance also apply to artificial intelligence. The fact that there has always been a lack of accountability as to who's consuming your data and how is now beginning to surface as a problem. And why now? It's because of all these mass exposures of data that have happened in the last few years. If India as a country has been probably the most liberal when it comes to sharing data with its people. And the fact that Facebook chose India as probably the first country to launch Facebook Basics clearly was built on the fact that the Indians at large are very open about sharing data. But look, that is changing very quickly because education is improving. But let's take a step back and first understand some challenges with artificial intelligence where it stands today. First of all, has been building relevance to industries. Industries have always struggled with using artificial intelligence because of the high costs it always entailed, lack of manpower. You know, no matter who says what, India still lacks the critical manpower required to make artificial intelligence a success. If we compare ourselves to countries like China, which have introduced artificial intelligence at the school level, we are far, far away from that. And the fact is, because there's a lack of a governance framework in the country, data privacy is still a huge issue. Only recently, Singapore introduced a framework that organizations, must follow the broad contours to make artificial intelligence a real for people in Singapore and responsible AI. India still lacks at that, So organizations worry about getting into too many unknowns because they can't really hedge their bets because, they don't know if the government's going to decide that the new mandate for e-commerce is going to be different, let's say, to traditional retail. Because the policy on data is so divided and unclear from the government, organizations find themselves at a bit of a loss as to where should they put their money. Also, India is a country of vernacular. India is a country where language really matters, and hence the need for the human and AI interaction models is very high. And we are far away from perfecting the human and AI interaction models. Although, companies like Google have done a fantastic job of using NLP to probably, make their products and services available in mass markets of India in different languages, but we're still far away from actually going down to the nitty-gritties of each language and understanding the nuances of improving this entire interaction. So the only way AI is going to grow is when more people adopt it. There's going to be mass consumption. And for that, this entire human AI interaction model needs to improve. Okay, we've already spoken about employment, and I don't think we need to focus on that. But overall, if you ask me, one of the biggest considerations that India has ahead of it is, if we must overcome this entire scare about not having jobs and probably losing our data, is education. And education at the grassroots level. And teaching our kids on how to live with robotics and how to live with machines. For example, Amazon today has human exclusion zones in its warehouse. And, those kids are going to be working in those human exclusion zones. So we need to teach our kids as to how to behave and function in with machines. We need to teach our kids what is machine learning and why does artificial intelligence, why is it even important? And how to sort of, for example, let's take one of the problems India has today is IT services. A large part of our population in IT is still working in IT services. And that ITES as large as a community is being faced by new protectionism laws across the world and new automation happening at the ground level within their companies. So just imagine the amount of job losses that are going to happen in IT services. And that's where India needs the most amount of activation to reskill this already skilled labor and sort of help build new AI models for the country. So I think reskilling is an agenda. Is going to be one of the biggest hurdles ahead of us. It's not the relevance to the industry, it's not the cost, it's not the unknowns. Of course, there are issues as well, but the fact that we as a country still believe in human labor per se and not so much in automation, that's going to be a big stumbling block ahead of us, if you ask me.
Exactly. What about other facets, you know, that the government really has a role to play in to make AI pervasive yet responsible? What about from an ecosystem perspective, what about institutions of higher learnings, etc., which are also needed? And you know, therefore, this ecosystem that comes in, because you have startups, certainly, but you need this support system of institutions of higher learning. You have great companies which are doing great jobs. In fact, you know, Accenture, for one. So what's your take on that?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think there are four or five things that need consideration here. First of all, I think even before we start looking inwards, we must look outwards. And the need to have cross-border collaboration on AI research, I think, is going to be a door opener for the country. Countries like Germany, US, and UK are doing fantastically well when it comes to, you know, manufacturing, artificial intelligence, and, you know, in other areas, in healthcare, for example, or education. But whereas in countries like India, we're doing a fantastic job when it comes to agri-tech or food tech or, you know, distribution tech and supply chain technologies. So there's a huge need for this cross-border collaboration between countries which have the common agenda of artificial intelligence. And once we have that fabric, I think we can then move on to things like how do we, for example, import, you know, tutors and experts from, let's say, MIT and the other colleges into our colleges. Look, in India, while academia is interested in AI, but we do not have the kind of professors all the time available, and not on all the topics all the time. So this entire cross-border collaboration, I think, is not just going to be restricted on with private to private bodies, but also academia to academia, which is going to be helping India propel for the next wave of artificial intelligence. And I think that leads me to my second point, which is ecosystem. I think until now, we're still sort of facing this very competitive wave in the country, wherein everybody wants to solve the AI problem in isolation. But the fact is, it's not going to happen unless we truly believe in an ecosystem approach where we can co-create. And probably, you know, although there may be competition otherwise, but the need to work together is very critical, because no single company can solve this problem. I'll give you a very, very, very simple example. Mm-hmm. You know, in north of India, there is a problem of water, and you have to switch on your motor to get water. Now, there's a company based in Noida, a very small company, that automates this entire procedure. A small IoT chip is actually pushed to the traditional motor, and it switches on the moment water is there, and it cuts off when the water is full. Now, this is not a large company which is actually doing this innovation, but it's a very small startup based in Noida. So Just imagine the possibilities if such a technology is used in an ecosystem approach, where it gets government funding, where it gets private consumption, and probably gets the eyes of the VCs as well. A lot more can happen out of the same innovation on technology. I think the third thing is frameworks on data ownership and privacy. If there's one thing that is keeping India from having a global charter, is lack of data privacy frameworks. Now, we should not confuse frameworks to standards. They're two different things. Frameworks are broad guidelines that organizations must follow while adopting AI. And because AI is so pervasive, because AI hits citizens of this country, frameworks are all the more critical. Because AI impacts security, national security, hence frameworks are important. Last but not the least, while in India, the financial incentives have come through. You know, there's a lot of VCs who are investing money, and, you know, we're sort of building some great AI use cases. But unless there are non-financial incentives as well, which are built in by the government into a policy, I do not think, honestly, that the ecosystem will really flourish. And for that, I think the government needs to come in with a brand new policy. And I think we've done enough of talking. I think it's about time that the government champions something real on the ground and comes up with a very solid framework for AI to become a reality.
Okay. Quickly, I also wanted to really check with you. Now, coming down to companies, right, Indian companies, what do you tell them, companies which are really planning for AI, planning to make the leap this year? How do they really go about AI? Should they just put AI into everything, or should they really rethink the way they work, you know, when they're really deploying AI, so that then they also recognize bias, etc.? Well, what's your advice to these companies?
That's a very complex question. Let's break this down. There are two parts to this. You mentioned bias, a very important point, and we'll come to that separately. But you know, the age-old concepts of change management and technology adoption still are applicable to artificial intelligence, right? Sweeping changes never work. I think it's important to take baby steps, understand the potentials and the possibilities that artificial intelligence holds for your organization and for your industry at large, and then percolate it throughout the organization, wherein education is also done within the organization. Otherwise, it sort of becomes a myth again, another myth that, you know, we're going to lose our jobs, and there's going to be this entire mayhem that companies will actually end up going through, where a scare may actually go on. So I think taking baby steps, using very pointed use cases and trying to have an experience with them to understand how does it impact our business, what are the possibilities, and more importantly, how does it impact our employees? Because, you know, recently a lot of IT services companies have gone out and actually spoken about job losses. 9 to 10,000 people have lost their jobs. Now, was there a better way to manage it? Obviously, and always, right? You could have seen how the same 9 to 10,000 people could have been reskilled on something new. So I think taking baby steps, but you know, ignorance is not bliss in this this era of artificial intelligence. So not starting out is also, and procrastinating for too long is also a bad thing. So I think baby steps is very critical, if you ask me. Now to your second point of bias, it's a very complicated topic because bias in algorithm is as good as what we have learned as humans over course of time, right? And I'll give you a small example about bias. Most coders today are men, and they're the ones who are making an algorithm. And because men have a certain bias towards a few things, they tend to behave in a certain way. So to give you an example, not all women like pink. They have other color choices as well. But if a traditional a coder who is a man, who's probably coded in his brain coded in a way that a woman like pink, will always think like that and sort of push that bias in the algorithm as well. So I think having diversity within our coder base, within the developer base, is absolutely critical. You know, LGBT, for example, is a very critical thing that we need to solve in our society. And not a lot of our algorithms are sensitive towards LGBT as a topic. So I think bias can only be solved at the grassroots once the people who are behind the algorithm and there's a diversity, you know, around that. Unless we solve that core problem, we can never solve the problem of bias, if you ask me honestly. Also, that also leads us to another cross-section of our topic, which is consent. Now, and consent is being spoken about in global circuits these days, and you know, where consent becomes a legal implication, and that line is very thin again. Again, I think there needs to be mass education around what sort of data do you give consent to, and to the organization you're dealing with. Unless there is education around aspects around consent, there will never be a pushback on the algorithm, which is ultimately collecting the data. So I think even before we solve the issues of frameworks and privacy and bias, I think consent as a topic must be spoken about in the country. And there needs to be an activation around how and why we must be careful about the data we share. Because let's not forget, nothing in this world is free. If Facebook is free, we are the product.
Well, on that note, thanks for talking to us on this podcast, Sanchit. It was a pleasure, and I had a great time gaining insights on artificial intelligence, automation, and how all of this will really change industry and society at large. It was really fascinating to discuss why AI has taken center stage today, even though it's been around for such a long time. Recent developments in AI, real-world use cases, economic impact, and of course, the really most important part, how AI will make a difference to India, what the Indian government is doing and needs to do. And of course, our responsibility as individuals. We too have a responsibility to reskill ourselves rather than expect the government to do everything. So thanks again for being part of this podcast that was brought to you by Bloomberg Quint in association with Accenture. And we look forward to talking to you about many other issues at the intersection of technology and business in future podcasts.
Shunya One. Hey, this is Shiladitya Mukhopadhyay.
And I'm Amit Doshi.
And we host Shunya One, the weekly podcast based on conversations about startups, entrepreneurship, across verticals like food tech or fintech, and digital payments, logistics, e-commerce, and of course, all the stuff from VCs and investors as well.
Over the course of our run, we've had some really great entrepreneurs. We've had Zishan Hayat from Topper, Naya Sagi from Baby Chakra, Ankur Sachdev from ShareChat, and Akrit from Haptic, among many, many more.
Yep, and we continue to get some of the biggest, smartest, and most innovative folks in the country, in this space, coming here, talking to us, all for you guys to listen to.
So tune in every Tuesday on the IVM app, website, or wherever you get your podcasts from, and get a chance to be a part of all of the tech banter and entrepreneurship conversations on our Slack channel. Talk to our guests, they show up as well. All you have to do is request an invite on ivmpodcast.com/shunya1.
Hi, my name is Anupam Gupta. I'm B50 on Twitter. I am the host of Paisa Paisa, the show that talks money. On my show, I speak to experts from every field of money and finance, from stock markets, equities, debt funds, credit cards, life insurance, every possible area of money and finance that you can think of. We even did an episode on cryptocurrency. I've got fantastic guests from mutual funds to personal finance experts everywhere, robo-advisory startups, just name it, we've got it. At Paisa Paisa, we help you make smart decisions about money. You work hard for money, now make your money work hard for you. New episodes out every Monday, and you can listen to my show on the IVM Podcast app or any other podcasting app that you have.